Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You are listening to Steele Talkin'. I'm your host, Geralyn Steele. It is what I love to do is sit here and gab with you. And we've got a lot to talk about tonight. Of course, the gender gap, you know, pay gap for women has been in the news a lot lately. We've been seeing this grow over the last decade. And all of a sudden, it feels as though it's right in front of us, doesn't it? I can feel it in my chest. It's like everyone is talking about it. Well, let me tell you, actress Michelle Williams is talking about it. She came out this week about her discussions of equal pay. And we wondered, did her stance really move the meter or not? Well, Sheila Ronning is the founder and CEO of Women in the Boardroom, an organization founded with the goal of bridging the gender gap in the boardroom. She is recognized expert on boardroom diversity and leadership. Ms. Ronning is a frequent speaker at Harvard University, lecturing on this central topic, in addition to many other esteemed institutions. Welcome, Sheila Ronning. Thank you so much for joining us, Sheila.
Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you so much for having me. One thing you did not say in my introduction is that I'm a Minnesota girl.
You are a Minnesota girl?
I am a Minnesota girl. I'm living in New York. I've been there for like 10 years. But yeah, I created and started Women in the Boardroom when I was in Minnesota.
That's so awesome. I'm so glad you let us know that. And, you know.
Yes.
Don't you know? I mean, I know you. It still comes out of your mouth every now and then, right? Don't you know?
Of course it does, girl, for sure. I'm so excited to be on your show.
I'm really happy to have you, Sheila. You are doing big, huge things and really making a difference with this particular subject. How long have you had this company where you're really helping women really get out there and get into the boards, the very important boards? I mean, get close to the C-suite, right?
Yes. Well, and beyond, right? So 2002.
2002. A lot has changed since 2002 to today.
Yes. Yes, it has.
And so with women in the boardroom, you're seeing an absolute opportunity to really make a difference today, right?
Oh, you know what? There is. And it's, you know, and now we have, of course, the various states, the various countries that are, you know, having their mandated quotas or saying, hey, enough of the all white male board. And it's a good thing. So they're finally catching up. Yeah, I've never been for quotas, but, you know, if it takes a mandate to actually make it happen, then I'm all for it. So giddy up, everybody.
Exactly. This has been on the lips of so many women. I know Mika Brzezinski has her forum that she does. Have you ever participated in that?
I have not. I mean, there's a bazillion of them, I'll tell you that. I mean, I did some one in 2002, so thank you. But, yes, there's a lot of them popping up all the time. There's, you know, of course, all the certification programs out there to women that, listen, even though, you know, we're not a search firm by any means, and I'm not a big fan of the search firms. I feel like they don't do women justice or, you know, ethnicity justice either for that matter. And they're all about the almighty dollar. So I just want to make sure everybody knows we're not a search firm, but we do get in a lot of board openings. In fact, oh, probably more than 250 in just the last 2 years. And none of them want, you know, are in need of a certification. So all of, you know, I know you brought the Mika thing. I just wanted to let everybody know that people are just really trying to go, oh, wow, women, it's kind of cool to have a women's organization now and make money off of them. I just want to make sure women realize what they have to do and what they don't have to do.
Exactly. And that's what I got from your website as well, Sheila. In fact, you know, the big challenge is messaging. You know, all of these, like you said, there's a gazillion of them, that the messaging isn't the same.
Yeah, exactly.
So how do you fight that? How do you get out in front and say, no, 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 I understand what this one is doing and that's fine. Pieces of that is fine. But please know you also need to know this.
Well, first and foremost, you know, I just have to say that, you know, I get called by the media because they love to say, oh, gosh, you know, founder and CEO of Women in the Boardroom, she must hate men. So let's get her on record and, you know, get her to give us some little good juicy things. And my first thing is like, listen, I don't hate men. Men aren't the problem. I mean, I love men.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, I know this is a live radio station. Maybe we'll go and settle with it some other time, Sherilyn. But it is not, you know, listen, women love to hold themselves back. Nobody else has to do that for them. All I'm saying is men aren't holding us back. Sure, there's a few. There's a few men that are just not so great that are trying to hold us back. But for the most, in fact, I know of one in Minnesota. But again, another phone call. But the most men are not trying to hold women back. In fact, women just do such a great job of it themselves, not only holding themselves back, but other women as well. So if they would just get out of their way, they, you know, they could have it. But it doesn't happen like that all the time. I do realize there's some other complications when we're talking about, you know, pay equality and things like that. There's all other little nuggets that are an issue. But as far as like the boardroom, the corporate boardroom, that top job, we as women, we just feel like some, you know, we're just like, I don't know, am I qualified? I will have a woman come to me who's in the C-suite of a Fortune, a global Fortune 50 company, and say, you know, whisper in my ear, am I qualified? Mm. And I'm like, girl, please, of course you are.
And does that question come up because they don't value who they are? They just don't really know who they are and what they have to give to this board?
Well, so it's a couple of things. One, of course, it's a sweet job, right? I mean, serving on a corporate board, and it can be. And if, a company goes in crisis mode, then, of course, it's a lot of work. And, you know, you get a big paycheck, and that's what people love, is that they can now start doing that, you know, that 24/7 full-time executive gig and then go into serving on corporate boards and maybe, you know, maybe do the beach a little bit too, right? And I mean, so it's a variety of different things. And everybody's reason for wanting to serve on a corporate board is different. Mm-hmm. But certainly all of them come back and say that serving on a corporate board, it's good. You know, they feel like they get more than they give even. And they love to give. You know, they love to help that company get to the next level, but it's sitting at that table with extremely smart people and learning how to do business a different way. I always say, listen, you're either learning and growing or you're dying. You cannot stay the same.
It's so true. It's so true. And so here we are looking at women who are peering through your lens for the first time and saying, really, is this a possibility? You have so many ways of letting them know how important this is. If we have more women at the corporate boards sitting at that table, that means we all move up the, you know, another rung on the ladder. They elevate all of us. Am I correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
But we don't seem to know that. How do you get that messaging out?
You know what it is? I don't know, like, from how we're raised as little girls. I mean, you think about, like, if I don't want to get us off track, but you have, like, a man and a woman who are married, and the guy cheats. Who does the wife hate? She hates the woman. It's like, no, it's your husband. He's the one who's supposed to be committed to you. We have to stop beating each other up. We really have to help our sisters out, period.
Right.
And stop being so competitive with them. There is more than enough room for more than one at the top. I mean, and, you know, even you look at politics, and I used to be, like, so focused just on corporate, you know, corporate women, corporate executives. But really, it goes hand in hand. How many women do we have in office, and how many women are in the boardroom? Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly, I mean, we got to have women there to make sure that we're all working, you know, moving forward. But again, from my space, the world I'm in, and again, I know, you know, pay equality and things like that, it really, women need to just realize they are good enough and they need to go for it. It's not just as simple as that. I've certainly been in situations myself where there's been other things standing my way, but you know what? I left that.
Wow, you dropped it.
You know,
you left all of that behind and moved forward. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, my thing is, I'm always like, listen, first of all, you got to show up. You have to stand up and you have to speak up.
So, Sheila, here's the thing. There are plenty of women that are serving on the boards of nonprofits, right? And even then, it's hard for us to speak up and know that what we have, you know, that we value ourselves and we position ourselves in a way to make sure we get on some of those important boards as well. Is that a stair stepper to the corporate boards?
It can be. And so I'll explain why. So I'm asked that question all the time of is serving on a nonprofit board the gateway into a corporate board? And I'll say it can be. And so my reasons why are, one, and this is, listen, I also have to say, preface it by saying, I don't want women to stop doing their charitable work. That's not what I'm saying. But I have no desire to help women volunteer one more minute of their time. Mm-hmm. You know, women, we're just love to just give away our stuff for free all the time. And you can serve on a nonprofit board and it can help you. But one, you need to make sure that it's a large nonprofit board so that, you know, you're really on this well-run board. It's a well-run board so that you're learning good corporate governance. You need to make sure there's men at the table because you need to use it as a networking event or networking opportunity. You need to make sure you're taking a leadership role. You need to first and foremost need to make sure that you know what the give and get is. Meaning, do they want you to go out and fundraise for $100,000 mm-hmm. or do they want you to write a check, you know, for $25,000? Personally, and I'll tell you the big difference between New York and Minnesota in nonprofit world is to be on those big nonprofits. In New York, you actually have to write a check for like $15,000.
Absolutely.
Personal check.
Absolutely.
So you need to know what the give and get is, but also you need to know, do they want you for 5 months, 5 years, you know, or is it 5 hours a week, 5 hours a month? You really know what that stuff is ahead of time. And then it can help you, but you need to make sure that there's men at the table and use it as a networking opportunity.
So how is that defined when it's in the corporate boardroom? When you come in, when you are first asked and you're with that committee and they're looking at you and may want to make the offer to have you on the board, what yeah. is it that brings you? How do you position yourself to make sure that that is the board that not only you should be on,
yeah.
that you want
Thank
to be
you.
On, but Thanks that you can that. Really yes. make a difference on?
And you said corporate board?
Yes.
Okay, so first of all, a corporate board is not going to even bring you in the room to interview you unless you have the skill sets they're seeking. So that's first and foremost. But you okay. certainly need to do your due diligence ahead of time, meaning, do I want to serve on this board?
Right.
Are they going, you know, every time you're on a corporate board, they should definitely have D&O insurance to protect you from liability. And D&O is directors and officers insurance. But one thing that D&O insurance cannot protect you from is a reputational, you know, mishap. It can't, insurance will not cover your reputation. So yeah. you need to do your due diligence and check the other board members out. You need to check out who's their accounting firm, who's their, you know, the executive. Do I want to be on this board? What kind of problems have they had? Do they want me to just come in and check that box or check a couple boxes for them?
Right.
And why do they want me on the board? So if they bring you into the room, at that point, they really are wanting to make sure that you get along.
So is that where the gender diversity comes in? You know, are they just putting you on the board to check a box?
No, I don't. I honestly, again, I'm going to go back to my comment of saying, you know, men really are not the problem. Sure, there are a few of them that are, but I have time and time again, they want to just, like, for instance, I had this guy who had helped a couple of our VIP members are on his significantly sized bank board. And he has said to me, listen, I can't have somebody who's coming onto the board that's not a type A. Mm. You know, things like that mm-hmm. where, because you're digging in and you're dealing with some very, strategic, intense things, and they just don't want to have board members there that aren't getting along with one another. A perfect example of one of my members was asked this question. She was being interviewed for an all-male board, and the chair or the nom-gov chair said to her, listen, if you know, if the rest of the board members and you are conflicted, but you're thinking it should be one way, and they think it should be other, how are you going to handle that? And she said, well, listen, if it is my area of expertise, I'm going to make sure that you understand why I feel this way. If it is not my sandbox, right, if it's not my area of expertise, I'm going to look to the person on the board that is why they're on the board and say yes, what he says.
Right. Mm.
So it's that chemistry. It's making sure to know your place and, you know, and that you're going to speak up and ask great questions.
Well, this is encouraging because as you are talking, it reminds me of how we have excelled at getting more women into politics, you know, even nationally. And that whole journey has been a long road,
yeah.
right? But
yeah.
we made it. It's the same thing with the boardroom. We have to make it there. Do you believe that we are really close to being a gigantic piece of the corporate board?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So in order to be that close, you're telling us tonight, you've already given us some great advice that we have to be confident. We need information. We need to
yeah.
feed ourselves with as much information as possible. Now, positioning ourselves, there's a lot to that. And it is a delicate dance when it comes to positioning
yep.
yourself. You don't want to come off too confident. You don't want to come off like, you know, I'm better than everyone else on the board. If there was one thing you want to explain or to share with this audience about positioning yourself for a corporate board, what would that be?
Okay. So first of all, women need to get over the fact that, you know, I'm coming across too cocky and arrogant. Listen, if you don't tell them, how are they supposed to know?
Right.
And it comes down to, right?
That's really good, yeah. If you don't tell them, how are they supposed to know? But isn't it in the way that we tell them? Because, you know,
okay,
that's the first thing we do. We back off and just kind of soften ourselves.
I got to tell you, it's like you're giving women every excuse in the book. Oh, but if she says it that way, she doesn't say it at all. Let me just tell you. It's all about networking, and it's how you're speaking to your network. It's how you're positioning yourself with your network. If you go to John, you know, white male board member who's been on boards for 20 years, and you go to him and you say, John, oh my gosh, you know, I'm really thinking about getting onto a corporate board. What do you think? What do you think I should do? And that's what most women do. I am like, you go to John and you go, hey, John, as a global Fortune 50 executive, C-suite executive, I'm looking to get onto a corporate board. With my expertise in operations and in strategy, a company that is in a high growth mode or, you know, that's looking to scale, whether it's organically or via acquisitions, or a company that is looking to expand their footprint, whether it's internationally or domestic, is a company where I would add tremendous value. And I would like to know, is there anyone in your network you can connect me to?
There you go. Boom.
Boom. That's right.
You
Boom.
Nailed it, Sheila. You nailed it. And that's what we need to hear. If we have to change our mantra every day and encourage
exactly.
ourselves, pump ourselves up
yeah.
and get us ready
yeah.
to go there. Now, I want to let everyone know that Sheila Ronning deals with VIP women, okay? You deal with the
right.
women that are already on their way, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But
so,
it doesn't mean I can't help other women, but it is, we're very much about the senior level executive women. They have to be qualified. They just need to know, they need to know what they bring to the table and what boards they're qualified for.
Oh, how I wish I had more time with you. I have so many questions about then how do we begin that whole journey as well.
We can have more time, girl. We can have more interviews. I'm free. I'm available.
Okay, you got a deal. We're going to call you back on and really talk about this
yes,
subject because it
do.
Is so current. It is right now. Women are really looking to see what not only what should I do, but what can I do? And you are at the forefront of that for me. So thank you so much, Sheila, for joining us tonight. If people
thank
want
you.
More information about women in the boardroom, where do they go?
They go to womenintheboardroom.com.
Hey, there you go. That's easy.
I
Womenintheboardroom.com. Keep going. I really admire you for doing this and for making a difference for all the women that need to be on
yeah.
these corporate boards.
And you too, by the way. Listen, I was digging around about you, and you are a rock star. And 21 years you've been doing this. How
yeah.
awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you very much. On Sunday nights, 4 hours. It's amazing that I've been
Love
here
it.
On Sunday nights for 20 years. Thank you so much, Sheila, for saying that and for being on with us tonight. And I absolutely will call on you again.
Perfect. Thank you.
Take care of you.
All right. Bye-bye, you too.
Bye. That is Sheila Ronning. If you don't know anything about Women in the Boardroom, please, please check her out. womenintheboardroom.com. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. It is now 8:29 here at WCCO. We're going to come back in just a moment and do some weather. And then, of course, we're going to have our next guest on. And who is it? It's Travis Whitford. Now, you may have heard him here on WCCO. And who is it that he sits in with? Because I haven't heard him in a while.
Chris Rooney and Andy Prasky. He was actually in yesterday as well.
He was in yesterday. Yes. Anyway, we love him here at WCCO. And I can't wait to talk to him about how low the mortgage rates are right now. I mean, they are bottoming out. Some are saying that it's an all-time record low. Don't you want to hear about that? Ooh, just wait. Stay tuned. Wait for it. Wait for it. Oh, that's what I'm talking about. I am dancing in my seat. That's the bottom line. Welcome back to Steele Talking. I am your host, Geraldine Steele. And as promised, Travis Whitford is joining us. Okay, mortgage rates are bottoming out. And they're at an all-time record low, they tell us, right?
So no, not quite.
Not quite, Travis? Come on.
Not quite. No, they were actually a little bit better in most of 2016. And the second half of 2012 and the first half of 2013, they were a little bit better. But, you know, we're under 4%, the base rate, so, you know. That's pretty much kind of like free money in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, well, it's a great idea for those that are looking for a home. I'm sure a lot of young people are rushing out. I'm hoping that the millennials will really start to buy more or buy anything with this record low, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of millennials that are buying houses these days. Problem is sometimes the home prices are getting a little bit outside of their comfort zone and stuff. So that first-time home buyer price is you know, kind of a little higher this day, and like then as opposed to about 2 years ago. I mean, there's been a lot of appreciation in the market on home values here, which was making these lower rates, making it that much more affordable for them to get that first house. It's nice to have these low rates with these home prices going up, so they can get that back to that affordable level.
Mm-hmm. So it's still a seller's market right now.
Yeah, it's still pretty much a seller's market. If you got your house priced right, you know, you're going to have multiple offers, and, you know, chances are you have to, you know, probably bid a little bit more than the house is worth, that the house is listed for, if it's priced right.
Okay. So does it change any of the incentives for first-time home buyers? You know, a lot of times we'll give those money available for people who are first-time home buyers to get into the home that they want. But when it's this low, do they change how that's done, or they take away some of those incentives?
Nope. All those incentives are still there. It just makes it. You know, you just have a better interest rate to obtain. So you can either, you know, qualify for a larger house, or, you know, get the same house and, you know, have a little cheaper payment than you were initially planning on having going into it.
Yeah. What about refinancing? Those that have a home and their interest rate is much higher than they really can be comfortable with. Refinancing is a good idea.
Yeah. It depends on what interest rate you have and what kind of goal that you have. You know, you're not just going to refinance just to refinance, but you know, if you have an interest rate, you know, north of 4.5, you know, you should easily be looking at it. Even if your interest rate is lower than that, you know, people, there's all sorts of needs to refinance. I mean, you have people that want to take cash out to do home improvements or debt consolidation, or, you know, help pay for, you know, their kids' college. A lot of people right now with like 15-year mortgage rates down pretty much around 3, you know, there's a lot of people right now that are looking at, you know, going from a, you know, a 30-year mortgage and going all the way down to a 15-year to try and get that house paid off here sometime soon.
Okay. So when we look at fixed rate or variable rate, which one would you recommend? Because, of course, I don't like variable rate at all. I would always stick with a fixed rate.
Yeah. And in this day and age right now, there's not a lot of difference between a variable rate and a fixed rate. And when these fixed rates are so low, it's my opinion, I don't think it's wise to look at a variable rate unless you know, like, you just got a job and you know you're getting transferred maybe like in 2 years or something like that. You're going to be out of that house in a couple of years. But it's weird. Like sometimes even these ARM rates are worse worse rates than like a 30-year fix. So in most instances, people aren't looking at ARM mortgages anymore these days.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? That's a good idea. Just ignore it. Yeah. You know, here's the thing. When it comes to the prices being higher for the homes and the interest rates are really lower, you still have the PIT, I think it is, that tax principal and interest. And if you pay 20% down, I think it is, then you don't have to pay that amount won't be in your monthly mortgage. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, you're talking about PMI, private
PMI,
mortgage.
PMI, yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, 20% down is the benchmark to avoid any sort of private mortgage insurance. And as I've talked about a few times on our Saturday show, there's ways to get out of mortgage insurance too, so you don't have it in your monthly payment. A real popular option, it's called a single premium, where basically you pay some extra closing costs and you just buy out of the monthly mortgage insurance. And in a lot of instances, that cost that, you know, you buy out of it and, you know, it's going to pay for itself within about 2 years, mm-hmm. you know. So there's a lot of tricks and tools that you can do to get rid of the mortgage insurance with less than 20% down.
All right. When it comes to reverse mortgages, of course, that's been really popular with seniors, and some people say it's the way to go. But how would this low interest rate affect or adversely affect reverse
yeah,
mortgages?
It's like typically reverse mortgages, you don't even really worry about an interest rate, you know, it's because you're not paying anything. I mean, if you have a lower interest rate on your reverse mortgage, maybe the interest accrues at a little bit lower level. So maybe you don't owe quite as much on the house, you know, a few years down the road. But people that do reverse mortgages, you're not doing it to be interest rate sensitive. You're doing it to get payments made to you or to not have mortgage payments at all. That's the whole point of a reverse mortgage.
All right. So take advantage of it while you can. Get that fixed rate. It's really low. What is it right now?
Freddie Mac's the average rate right now is for a 30-year fixed is 3.75. So 3.75, and they do advertise 0.6 in points with that rate. So you're solidly under 4, which is great. And a lot of people that, you know, bought a house this time last year or last fall are all mid upper 4s, you know. And I think if you don't know if it's worth it, call myself, call your current mortgage company, call your broker who you used, have a conversation with them, have them crunch the numbers, see if it makes sense. If it makes sense, pursue it. If it doesn't make sense or you're not saving enough, you know, then just stay where you're at.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure the banks and the mortgage companies are pretty happy about this because I think we're going to see an uptick of people buying homes, and that's a really good thing. That's a really good thing. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Travis. Also want to let people know that you are frequently heard on Saturday mornings on the Real Estate Radio Hour on WCCO Radio. Will you be on this coming weekend?
I was just on yesterday, so my wife and I are actually expecting our second child here in a couple of weeks. So
I'm gonna.
Thank you. I'm gonna go on sabbatical until towards the end of September here. So
well, go ahead, Papa. That's a great idea. So it's so great. I caught you before this beautiful incident is about to happen. So Travis, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right.
Good night.
You too. That's Travis Whitford, sales manager with Bay Equity Home Loans. Again, that's sales manager with Bay Equity Home Loans. You hear him frequently on Saturday mornings. And as you just heard him say, he won't be on this weekend because he is expecting a brand new baby. How cool is that? If you want to reach out to him, though, soon, go to bayequityhomeloans.com/Oakdale, and you'll be able to reach him. My son, Michael Battle, is in studio. And I do have a question for you, Michael. When it comes to homes, you know, I've been really bugging you. You and Joy, in fact, on buying something somewhere. I don't care if it's a one bedroom, one bathroom condo. I don't care if it's a studio apartment. When I was 21, I bought a home in the 80s. Right, your mm-hmm. father and I, we bought our first home at 21 years old, and the interest rate was 16%.
Wow.
The 80s were rough.
That's
man.
Brutal, yeah.
It was brutal, right?
Yeah.
And so the cost of the home was really low because the interest rates were so high. Now that the interest rates are low and the cost of the homes are really going up, Would you ever consider it right now?
It's not so much about considering buying a home. I live in Los Angeles. I would love to buy a house right now. But, of course, L.A. is one of the most expensive cities in the country.
I'm sorry. Let me say this again. So, like, if it's a studio or apartment in Pensacola, Pensacola is pretty expensive. Let's say Poughkeepsie. I just want you to own something.
So, as you heard, I just moved last weekend, actually.
Yes.
The area from which I just moved, if I were to buy a one-bedroom, actually not even one-bedroom, a studio apartment in that same area, guess how much it would be starting?
$500,000.
More.
No way.
We're talking $750,000 or more
for a studio apartment.
Apartment. And I wasn't living in some extra affluent area of Los Angeles. It was just a decent part of L.A. But yeah, that's the entry price point to live in an area that isn't completely run down. To buy a studio. And my friends who are buying properties are doing so, many of them with the help of their parents, and far away. They're going way out an hour north or south or east of Los Angeles proper to buy their homes. And they're getting down payments from their parents. And even with both of their salaries, they're still being helped by their parents and grandparents to maintain their mortgage while also working. And again, both partners in the relationship are having to work just to make those bills and those mortgages. So, yeah, I would love to buy a house, but frankly, I would probably buy a house in Minnesota first.
Okay, so that would be great. So $750,000
yes.
for a studio apartment. It must be 2,000 square feet.
Try 700.
I can't breathe.
Yes.
Aspen breeze, please.
Yes.
Send an aspen around the corner. Are you serious?
I'm serious. And of course, if you go further out, you could buy a two bedroom condo.
Further
somewhere.
Out, what are you talking about? Central?
If you go
Central California, or
no,
what?
No, I'm saying in Los Angeles. If you're downtown in certain areas, if you're in the valley over the hill, as they say,
right?
That's not about age. It's actually the physical hill, the mountain range that separates
I'm
the west
so glad
side.
That you clarified.
And the valley.
Thank you, dear.
So if you're in the valley and you go further north, there are condos you could buy. A one-bedroom or two-bedroom that might start around $550,000. So that is
so only $200,000 less.
Correct.
Oh, what a bargain!
To get something down to $300,000 or you know around there, which
yeah.
would be more affordable, even though that's not actually affordable
uh-huh.
for a lot of people out there. But to get around that range, you'd have to go into the lower income areas of Los Angeles. So you're going to deal with a lot more challenges in those areas. But that's where you can actually. Buy something around that price point. But anywhere else, yes, you're talking $550,000, $600,000 or more.
I just can't.
Now, if you want, let's say, like a four-bedroom house, no pool, but four-bedroom house, decent area, that's going to start at about $2 million.
And who doesn't want a pool?
Right. And if there is
a
pool.
I don't.
If there is a
Can
pool.
Can I just say I'm not interested in a pool?
I like to sit by the pool, though. It is relaxing. I'm not one to get in the
Why
water
Why would you
itself.
Spend that kind of money for a pool to sit by it?
If it comes with the house. And, hey, if you can afford a house with a pool in Los Angeles right now
mm-hmm.
or in San Francisco mm-hmm. or in Manhattan, good for you, you know?
So, no, I don't – hey, I'm not against anybody that's able to do it. I'm just saying I have no interest in a pool.
Right.
You know?
I
mean, if I had a pool, what would I do with it?
Sit by the pool.
You wouldn't get in it?
Not really.
I just don't understand that.
What
a waste.
But you have 10,000 lakes here. Just on the drive here, I saw lakes, beautiful, placid water. You know, in California, you don't have that. You either have the ocean or a city. There's nothing in between those two things. So a pool for a guy from Minnesota.
That's not true. You have the L.A. River.
Is come on.
You laugh
come on.
You laugh, but come on.
The concrete trickle,
she
you mean.
She just gave you the LA River.
The LA River.
Hey, it's
what
important.
What kind of mother are you?
It is important.
You gave
it
your
is
son
important.
The LA
it is
River.
Important. There's but, an area that we used to go to sometimes where we would go to look at the Hollywood sign.
Yes.
And the LA River went through that.
No, that was actually a water reserve up in the hills by the sign, which is
okay,
separate
then
from the
a water
River,
reserve, honey.
Which is surrounded by houses that cost about $4 to $10 million.
A reservoir?
So, yes, a reservoir. So,
well, a reservoir, like in St. Paul, their reservoir is a lake.
Right, but I think that's my point is that in a major city, if you want to look upon beautiful water mm-hmm. and sit by water that isn't at a hotel or at a country club,
I can see the point of having a pool. Again, I'm not one to jump in the water, but if you want to just relax and have that around you, it's more novel there because we don't have lakes everywhere. You aren't seeing water around you, and also it's so green here. I haven't been to the Twin Cities in the summer.
Yeah,
in
a long time.
I think 6 years.
Wow. Okay.
And it's just so green.
Yeah, so beautiful.
Lush and beautiful, and there's lakes, and I'm like, man, this is what people pay for land and pools in Los Angeles.
Right, and you just want to look at it.
Yeah.
You want to sit at that. I'm gonna go home and hug my tub. Because I don't understand. I do not understand what you're talking about. Just sitting by a pool, looking at its reflection.
It's beautiful.
Get in the chlorine, honey. Be bumpy for a moment.
Enjoy. Is that what happens to you?
Exactly.
Oh,
just
boy.
Be bumpy. You know, a lot of people are allergic to the chlorine.
I'm not.
So it doesn't really happen to me. I don't know if it happens to me. Do you know how long it's been since I have dipped myself in the pool?
See, this is maybe why you don't understand why it's so great.
That's why I'm going to take a break right now,
because
I'm never going to tell that story. You're listening to Steele Talking. I am your host, Geraldine Steele. And the voice you've been hearing is my son, Michael Battle, all the way from Los Angeles. The Mom and Michael Hour happens in the last hour at 10 o'clock. Do not go away. We'll be back in a moment. It is now 8:53 here at WCCO. Welcome back. We have about 5 minutes to really discuss this whole thing about the mortgage rate going way down. Of course, that affects so many other things as well. There are bad things that can happen with this. You know, the interest rate going down. Of course, you know, those that have savings accounts, you have no interest. It's just pitiful what happens when the interest rate drops down like this. And in some of the articles, it was saying that this is record lows. But, of course, Travis, who is on CCO often on the weekends, he said, look, this is really good for people who want to buy homes. But I can also just imagine how difficult it must be for those with savings accounts, particularly seniors who are just trying to, you know, get a little more money, interest on the money that they're trying to save. Boy, times have really changed, right? I don't know what the median price should be or the median interest rate should be. I really don't know where it's most comfortable. I just know that we need something to relieve all of the difficulty there is in trying to purchase a home. And that's specifically talking to other generations outside of the baby boomers, particularly the millennials and younger. They should be able to buy a house at 21 years old. Even if it's not in the best neighborhood, they still ought to be able to buy, because I know the one that I bought was not in the best neighborhood. But the neighbors were very kind. We all got together and worked with the police to get crime out of the neighborhood. And so, you know, being young with no children, we were able to do that. So, Michael, would you ever buy into a neighborhood that is, compromised in some way?
Yeah. I think if that's what it takes to own a home, that's the way to do it. And, of course, in Los Angeles, they're gentrifying everything so aggressively and so wide, which is a challenging issue in and of itself, that it's I couldn't sit here and say I wouldn't purchase a home that was in a more up-and-coming area, because that's how my generation is often doing it, unless they were previously affluent. So I think you kind of have to. And I have friends who are looking in those same areas. A lot of areas that were even affluent areas of color, you now have young Caucasian people moving into those areas because that's where the quote-unquote affordable homes are. So they can get a three-bedroom older house in the hills for $850,000 as opposed to paying the same amount for a two-bedroom in the city.
Yeah.
So, of course, they're going to go out to Baldwin Hills and buy an older home. And it's beautiful. You're in the hills, but it's an area that for generations has been all black and brown.
Yeah. So, Joey, in California, you were born and raised there, I believe, right?
I was.
All right. And of course, you have owned a piece of property there, own a piece of property
I still
there.
Own, yeah.
Yeah. And it's really a challenge to see. I can imagine what it seems like to you when you bought it versus today and what these crazy amounts are. That's got to be a trip for you to look at what you paid for and then, or even your, you know, maybe the home that you grew up in, that sort of thing.
Well, the childhood home that I grew up in was a typical middle-class three-bedroom, three-bathroom house in Santa Monica, which is a beautiful neighborhood.
That's a typical middle-class home?
In Los Angeles.
I'm so glad you got specific on darling, because I grew up in a three-bedroom, one-bathroom, six children, two parents, Everybody stop breathing for a moment.
One bathroom for six people?
That's why she hugs the tub.
For eight people. For eight people. Two parents and six children.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, as you were saying about the typical middle class home.
But as a lot of, I'm sure a lot of people know that Santa Monica is a beautiful neighborhood.
It is.
In Los Angeles. It's right by the ocean. Beautiful sidewalks, wonderful trees. It was a fabulous place to grow up. But the house that I grew up in, that I think my parents bought in the 80s for maybe $600,000 or $700,000.
Wow.
Michael and I were driving by that neighborhood a couple of weeks ago, and we saw that it was on the market. And we decided to take a look inside, you know,
hey,
so we could walk through my childhood home. It was really lovely. And then we saw the price of it. The house is being listed for $5.3 million.
Wow.
The exact same house.
It's the exact same house. They didn't do anything with it. They fixed it up a little bit on the inside, but they didn't do any add-ons or anything. It's $5.3 million.
That's incredible.
Shocking.
What a blessing. Just what a blessing.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys, we got to take a break. Coming up next is Center Stage, all thing arts and entertainment. We believe you ought to know about it, and I'm going to try to get Michael to interview somebody with me. We'll be back in a moment.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.